I'm John Batchelor with my colleague and co-host Bill Raggio, senior fellow of FTD, and David Dioud, watching Lebanon and Gaza for the Foundation for the Defense of Democracy. His reporting is on Longword Journal routinely. The introduction by the ambassador to the United Nations from the United States, Mr. Walz, of a 10-point plan from the Trump administration, led with a Board of Peace to oversee Gaza, a technocratic, apolitical committee of competent Palestinians from the Strip, is the quote from the 10-point plan. I don't have it. I'm reading from characterization of it and quotes from it in the New York Times. David, this is Mr. Trump saying take it or leave it, which is a negotiating tactic. I understand. It works in Manhattan Development. I don't know that it's the same in Gaza, but the ambition here is to come up with something that's moving forward with the less than half of Gaza now in control of Hamas. Is this a credible plan, or is it the opening round of plans? Or will there be others, David?
Look, I think to your point, this is probably an opening negotiation tactic. I think what the Trump administration is trying to do is to try to get the international community and actors that can, in fact, act and operate on the ground in Gaza. I think we have no interest in that, in running the day-to-day in Gaza, despite certain statements by the president back in February that Gaza would effectively become the 51st state. But putting that aside, I think what President Trump is trying to do is create active international engagement in the Gaza Strip, which is something, you know, that has not existed before. Right? The Israelis pulled out of Gaza in 2005, and by 2007, it was in Hamas's hands. And while international actors, the United Nations and others, did operate in the Gaza Strip, they weren't actively involved in precluding the rise of Hamas or in creating alternatives for Palestinians. I think what President Trump wants to see is a future for Gaza that does not slide back into Hamas's control, that is precluded from, or that precludes Hamas from reasserting its dominance over the Strip. So we don't end up in the position of another October 7th in, say, 5 to 10 years or whenever it is that Hamas decides it is sufficiently strong to do so again, and that the Strip itself does not once again become everything that it's become, you know, a hub of terrorist activity, the tunnels that have crisscrossed throughout the Strip. Something that sets a future plan for Gaza that forestalls that possibility, that precludes that possibility, because what we're hearing from Hamas is if they're given the chance, they will reassert their control over the Strip. They're not disarming. They're not giving up governance. They're going after their enemies. They're going after any potential rivals that may have arisen over the past 2 years in the Gaza Strip. So Hamas wants to come back. How do you stop them? And I think this is where President Trump's plan is going. And it's the only way to do that is to have an international force that's there, that is actively creating alternatives, that is actively precluding Hamas's resurgence, not just pouring money into an enclave that is run by a terrorist organization.
Bill, you have a question.
David, I'm going to read from the New York Times what it says about the stabilization force here. So I'll quote it directly. The resolution said that the stabilization force should coordinate with Egypt and Israel to train and support Palestinian police personnel, protect civilians, work to secure humanitarian corridors, and to secure border areas, end quote. We actually have a model for this with the Palestinians in the West Bank. How well has this worked out for security for Israel and for tamping down terrorist organizations there?
Look, it's been a mixed bag, to be very honest. There are times, I was in the Israeli army, and there were times where the preventative security police, that force that you're talking about, had to call on the IDF to take care of certain certain things, certain security concerns that had arisen. So there were times where the members of that force were cooperating with terrorist elements or were terrorist elements themselves. So there's a question of competence and there's a question of reliability, and that may replicate itself in the Gaza Strip. I think this force and whatever structure it has must have a built-in mechanism whereby it can rely on the Israelis if necessary. I don't see the Egyptians getting involved directly in the Gaza Strip, right? I don't see if a security concern arises that's too much for this force to handle, that the Egyptians will come in and kill, you know, effectively the way it's going to be perceived in the Arab world, kill Palestinians, even if those Palestinians are members of terrorist elements. So it's going to fall to the Israelis. So there has to be a mechanism for cooperation, not just, you know, high level cooperation, but on the ground cooperation, because I see, I do foresee a lot of this falling to the Israelis ultimately. But then there has to be a mechanism for vetting and constant vetting to make sure that these individuals are not, remain competent and remain on mission and do not, you know, we don't see things, say if there are joint patrols between the Israelis or joint operations between the Israelis, that we don't see things that we saw during the Second Intifada, where, you know, a person who was trained by the United States and probably armed by Israel is on a joint patrol with an Israeli soldier and then suddenly turns on them and kills them. And we saw incidents like this during the Second Intifada. So precluding things from that, there needs to be, you know, tighter control. There needs to be vetting, and there needs to be room for making sure that first of this force is competent and lethal enough to do the job, but also where it can't, that the Israelis will be able to move in and finish the job.
Comment by a writer for The Atlantic magazine, looking at the numbers left to Hamas to operate in the less than half the strip. 5,000 effective fighters, the number 20,000 includes auxiliaries and hangers-on, I'm told. And the leadership is middling to poor. However, that doesn't mean they're conquered. It does mean they're badly, badly damaged and cannot regenerate slowly over the years. David, here's the question. Does Hamas want the Gaza Strip rebuilt, or does it like it this way?
I think, you know, Hamas wants the Gaza Strip to look like whatever it will be most conducive to their control and their resurgence. If that's rebuilt, then so be it. I don't think they have necessarily an interest in their people living in rubble for the sake of rubble. But if the rubble is conducive to their resurgence, then so be it. That's where I think that Hamas wants to strip. You know, but if I may analogize to Hezbollah, does Hezbollah want Lebanon in ruin? Does Hezbollah want Lebanon not to get Western funding? Hassan Nasrallah used to say, you know, I don't mind American, and I'm speaking in his voice, may he rest in pieces, but I don't mind American support for the LAF. Give us the money, but don't give us terms. Don't dictate to us. Give us the money and thank you. And that's all. And I don't see Hamas being so ideological or puritanical that they will refuse Western or American or even Israeli money for that case, as long as it doesn't come with terms that preclude their resurgence or their ability to control the Gaza Strip. So if the Gaza Strip looks like Dubai, I think Hamas will be happy if that is what allows for its resurgence. And if it looks like Mad Max, then and that is the condition that will allow for their resurgence, I think they'll be just as satisfied, but that'll be good enough for them as well. So it's not the form, it's whatever allows them a pathway to regain control.
David Dowd of the Foundation for Defense of Democracies, Bill Rajo, senior fellow of FTD, keeping the long word journal, where you can see David's reporting.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.